keys, tackle box in my hand. Gonna cast a few lines with my toes in the sand. Pulling in a big catch makes me feel like a man. But the wife, she just don't understand. I love walleye, perch, trout, and bass. And if you don't like fishing, you can kiss my four-stroke right in the back. Cause the fishes all tremble at the thought of me when I'm fishing Paul Bunyan country.
This is Fishin' Paul Bunyan Country.
Well, as always, our season opener is with Henry Drews, the Regional Fisheries Manager out of the Bemidji Regional Office, the Northwest Regional Office here. And Henry, as always, we love having you on the show. Thanks for taking the time today.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Kevin. I wasn't sure this spring would ever come.
I think a lot of us were feeling that way. But it is here. I think we're going to be open by the opener. I don't think there's any doubt there.
Yeah, I think we're in good shape. You know, ice out has been running 3 to 7 days behind normal across northwest Minnesota. I think ice will be out on our larger lakes, you know, by the first week of May. You know, the one that might be a little nip and tuck with a few icebergs out there would be Lake of the Woods. So, by and large, we should be ice-free for the opener.
Okay, sounds good. Certainly, as I've, you know, talked to people over the last couple of years and already some spring interviews, by and large, the vibe is pretty good. The fish numbers are healthy in most of our key waters. I'm just hearing a lot of good things.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I think the fish populations are in good shape. You know, we've got tremendous fish habitat and good water quality up here. I think the situation is very positive. You know, we are dealing some, we'll talk later about invasive species, something we got to watch and see what happens. But I think the mood is pretty positive from all the survey and assessment work that our staff do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the big lakes in the Northwest region, and I always think of the top five from Paul Bunyan Country, but the big ones region-wide, Lake of the Woods, Red, and Leech. And all three of those lakes are doing incredibly well right now.
Yes, we've got multiple strong year classes in all of our large lakes, and I think you know, fish from 12 to 24 inches in all those lakes are fairly abundant. Nice distribution of size fish. You know, it's just been humming along really well. We've got some really strong year classes from 2011 and 2013. They're going to provide the bulk of the large fish and those intermediate size fish. And then we have, you know, some modest year classes in 14, 15, 16, and 17, you know, that'll offer some smaller fish too. But we're still seeing that gargantuan walleye year class from 2013 just dominate the fisheries on our large lakes and even some of our stock lakes too. And those fish this year going into the opener, depending on the lake, are going to be 14 to 20 inches in size.
Okay. Again, really good reports there. But also, you know, Bemidji, Cass, and black duck, and even another, you know, the layer below that, most waters seem to be doing well. I know we're concerned with some potential winter kills this particular year, but overall, the lakes seem healthy.
Yep, they're very healthy, and the winter kill, we do see more of it this year than a normal year, typical year, because we had such deep snow and thick ice and a persistent, you know, winter conditions. But that really affects none of our primary or second tier walleye lakes. You know, that's more of the bass panfish lakes and some that are fairly shallow anyway. But the winter kill situation, while you hear a little bit of it in the news, has really no impact on our walleye fisheries in northwest Minnesota.
No, I mean, those are definitely smaller lakes, shallow lakes, yeah. A lot of bass panfish type lakes that are most affected by winter kill.
That's correct. And they also are lakes that have some history of winter kill. And, you know, when we have winter kill, it resets the clock. We can go in there and put some adult fish in, and those fisheries bounce back really fast. Okay. But back to your point about the second and third tier walleye lakes, the Bemidji's, Cass, the Plantagenets, and the Woman's, and the Boys, and the Inguadonas, and Fishhook, and that next layer of lakes down there, the 3 to 10,000 acre lakes, they're all doing very well right now, and I think they're going to be real good bets, you know, heading into this fishing season.
All right, so there's a lot of more things I want to talk about, but let's just get to the proverbial 500-pound gorilla in the room. That is this continuing spread of AIS, particularly in our key lakes, zebra mussels. And, you know, you look at it, Winnie, Leech, Cass, Bemidji, and now Red. Five big waters that get lots of boats. It's hard to believe that this is a coincidence.
Yeah, you know, it's boats. It's water-related equipment. There's all sorts of things that could be vectors for spreading it around. And some say, well, why do we need to be vigilant now? It's already in this many lakes. Well, it's still only in, by the numbers, you know, a relatively small percentage of our lakes in the state. So we do need to sustain our vigilance on clean, drain, dry, and checking all the equipment we have really well. And there's other invasive species that aren't here yet we don't want. So right. So we need to stay vigilant. In terms of the impacts, you know, that's a work in progress. You know, we've not seen any walleye fisheries up here that have had a dramatic change in the walleye population as a result of zebra mussels yet. Could the clear water change how people fish? I think that's a yes. We're seeing shifting of fishing pressure on cass and even winnie more towards night fishing. We expect to see that in the next few years, even on leech, as zebra mussels become established. So it's changing how people fish probably more than the fish populations themselves. That's our early assessment.
I know that you know, it's all theoretical at this point, but a lot of people saying it won't have that much of an effect as far as when to fish on red, just because of the way that water stays clouded up. It's more sand based than algae based.
Well, you know, I think that's probably a good assessment. It'll be a wait and see. Typically, once you find veligers in a lake, it's probably 3 to 7 years before you have a real heavy population in there. So we're a ways down the road yet before we see what the impacts would be. But in general, you know, Red Lake, the color of Red Lake comes from the tannins, which is the color of the material from the bog. You know, it's a bog flowage, and the water source for the Red Lakes comes largely from flowage through the bogs. And those tannins can't be filtered out by zebra mussels. So that color will persist. And then it's so shallow, the lake mixes all the time. So you're going to have fine sediments in the water all the time. And zebra mussels also are not very effective at removing suspended sediments. So I think it's safe to say that we're not going to see a water clarity change, especially in the next, you know, 5 to 7 years on Red Lake. Other impacts, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see. The upper basin is very shallow. It's got a lot of energy with the large, you know, width and length of the lake, a lot of wave energy pounding on the rocks along that drop-off all around the lake. Zebra mussels, in general, do not handle wave energy very well. And so that area, by getting constantly beat by the waves and then the ice formation in the winter and the ice going in and out, we may not see zebra mussel abundance in the shoreline areas around Red Lake like we do see in other waters.
Much more to come with Henry Drews, and we put Dr. Andrew Hafes to work right away as well.
Some people say fishing is overrated. For the record, they are wrong. This is Fish and Paul Bunyan Country. You're listening to Fish and Paul Bunyan Country.
Welcome back. Continuing my conversation with Henry Drews, the Northwest Regional Fisheries Manager. You mentioned the changing patterns of fish. You know, I mean, Cass Lake was always a low-light fishery for walleyes anyway. Now it's just more pronounced. It's even earlier in the morning or even later at night.
Yeah, it's you see the accesses get really busy come about 6 to 7:30, 8 p.m., you know, and that's when a lot of the real hardcore walleye fishermen are going out. You know, it's not that way early. The first 2-3 weeks of the season, it fishes like everywhere else, you know, typically shallow in the flowages and that. But as summer progresses, you start seeing people move out, and largely they're doing a lot of trolling at night, and they're very effective, those night anglers. Daytime, a lot of the folks, as we've been talking to resorters around the lake, you know, are taking advantage of the really high-quality yellow perch fishery that's out there right now. So the resort guests are fishing with their families for perch during the day and doing very well, and then at night they're going out and getting serious about walleyes.
And I'll certainly be talking with Nicole Kovar about some of this stuff down the road, but I'm assuming that you have taken a look to the east where zebra mussels have been longer to see what's happening over there. Any trends you've noticed?
nothing's standing out. You know, in the long term, and really zebra mussels have been on the scene in Minnesota for not that long, 10, 15 years. In the long term, you know, we see that they may have an effect on the productivity of the lakes and kind of lowering the overall productivity. But in terms of measuring direct impacts from that change on our walleye fisheries at this point, we just don't have the data to make any conclusive comments.
Okay. Well, let's take a look again at some of the other things going on. I know that we definitely have some great musky waters. Leech has really had some tremendous years lately. I've been hearing great stuff from Cass, and I know we're loaded with monster fish in Bemidji.
Yeah, the musky populations, you know, our stocked lakes like Bemidji, Plantagenet, Little Wolf, and then on down into Walker, Park Rapids, you know, they've gone through changes through time. When they were only 10, 15 years into their stocking regime, when the species was first getting going in there, you know, we had high catch rates, a lot of smaller fish, and, you know, in the 40s, lower 40s, and lots of observations. As those stocked fisheries matured, we start to see populations, especially with the size regulations that are in place and the catch and release ethic, we see fewer numbers of fish, but larger individuals. You know, that's just that natural progression to a mature fishery. So we're trying to do some things with our stocking rates and that to try to even out that size distribution somewhat. But at present, those lakes we initiated stocking back in the 80s are pretty well known now for at this point in time for fewer fish, fewer musky encounters, but very large individuals, numbers of, you know, fish from 48 to 53 inches.
Yeah, so if that's what you're after, you know where to go.
Yeah, and you know, the natural lakes have a little bit different. Cass and Leech and Winnie and some of the natural lakes down by Walker, you see a more even size distribution in those natural lakes. You don't see those populations quite dominated by those larger individuals. So, like on Leech, it's more common than Bemidji to catch 30-inch fish, for example.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And we have tremendous bass numbers, and I don't know. It just maybe it's the growth of the college and now high school fishing teams out there, but I am hearing more and more. I mean, I've always heard about it over on Leech and the Park Rapids area, but I'm hearing more and more people talking bass fishing all over the Northwest region.
Yeah, I think it is growing in popularity, and if it's if targeting that species is a way to recruit more young high school, middle school, or college age kids into fishing, man, that's good news, because we're seeing a lower level of participation by youth today. So any way we can get youth in, whether it's tournaments or whether it's just family fishing, whatever, the park, state park programs, I Can Fish, I Can Camp, the more we can get youth involved, the better for the future of our sport in Minnesota.
Undoubtedly, and that is exciting, you know, when you was it 2 years ago now already, or was it last year? I think it was 2 years ago now.
2 years ago, yeah.
We had the College Masters Championship here, and it was just so awesome to see all these guys, 18 to 22 years of age, just totally involved in fishing. It was, you know, it was a good sign.
Yes, it was, and you know, that's going on all over the country. You know, high school trap shooting is the number one high school sport in the state of Minnesota now, and mm-hmm. and competitive fishing at the high school level is growing by leaps and bounds. So those activities are hopefully bringing some new people in, and not just another venue for the kids that already do that. And so, any way we can get more youth outside and doing things out in nature, you know, are good things. And we as an agency try to really support and stand behind that.
Okay. But again, the bass numbers in the Northwest are very, very strong, both the largemouth and seemingly growing smallmouth populations. And even lakes that you'd consider, you know, tremendous walleye fisheries are loaded with bass, the Lake of the Woods and Leech particularly.
Yeah, most of the really good bass fishing in Lake of the Woods is takes place in Ontario.
Right.
Our waters are largely, you know, walleye, but man, you get across the Canadian border up into the islands, and it's pretty special fishing for smallmouth. Leech, the smallmouth bass are definitely expanding. It's not yet regarded as a destination smallmouth fishery, but it is for largemouth, and the people that know how to target smallmouth on leech can do very well. We're also seeing expansion of smallmouth in the Turtle River chain. Those were put in there a number of years ago by, an unauthorized stocking, we'll just call it that, but into Beltrami, and they are spreading into Mobile and Big Turtle and Turtle River Lake now. And some people may be concerned that the competition between smallmouth and walleye, but what happens is that the smallmouth are more aggressive and they can take over some of the fishing spots where the habitat, like reefs, where people normally catch walleye. But direct consumption, they don't eat walleye. So they're eating some common foods that one another eats, but they're not eating each other.
So much more to cover with Henry Drews, the Northwest Regional Fisheries Manager. We'll tackle that in the next show. But coming up next, we're already putting the aquatic biologist to work. We'll grill Dr. Andrew Hafes.
Fishing Paul Bunyan Country, where fishing is more important than, well, pretty much everything.
Ask the aquatic biologist.
Since we are just finally getting into spring, we will talk winter and winter kill with Dr. Andrew Hafes. Andy, what causes winter kill, first of all, and how or can we help with it?
So there's two main things. Obviously, if the lake freezes all the way, that's going to kill all the fish that are in it. But that is, in reality, that's the rarer of the two, because a system like that usually probably doesn't have fish in. If it's capable of freezing all the way, it probably didn't have fish in to start with. The other main way that it probably occurs is that dissolved oxygen levels are too low in the system. So what's using up all the oxygen, right? Oxygen is produced through photosynthesis, right? So during the summer months, it's never really an issue because you have all the algae, all the plants that are there producing dissolved oxygen that's in ample quantities for the fish. What happens during the winter is that, in particular, in years with a lot of snow, the snow blocks the light from getting through into the water where the plants and algae are, so photosynthesis is shut off. O2 production then is not happening, and DO levels go down because there are still organisms in the system that are respiring or using it, and then there's also decomposition occurring. So why doesn't this happen in all lakes? Lake Bemidji is deep enough where there's a good O2 reserve. And then additionally, a lot of the lake, during the summer, light cannot hit the bottom, so there's not aquatic plant growth. Right. Okay. So in a system that's smaller, or in particular shallower, where plants can cover the whole bottom and there's this enormous production occurring throughout the summer, once the lights get shut off, there is all this biomass of plants in there to decompose and consume all that O2. So That's really it. Is it photosynthesis, decomposition, and respiration are the main processes, and shallow lakes are extremely productive and don't have those huge O2 reservoirs there. And the years where you really see it happen is when there's big snowfall because the light got shut off and photosynthesis got shut off.
Okay, so that is what tends to happen, shallow lakes, and of course I knew that, really didn't know the reasons why. Also tends to happen in lakes that do not have an inlet or an outlet, correct?
I'm not aware of that, but possibly.
I guess I was under the impression that if there was a river flowing through, that seems to help.
I could see how it would. You'd have fresh water sources coming in that still have O2 in, and there's safe havens for the fish to go if they need it.
Okay.
So that's logical, I guess. But yeah, you kind of caught me off guard with that one.
Okay.
I never heard of that, but it makes sense.
Okay.
It's also probable that I think that systems that have those inlets and outlets are probably a little larger.
True.
It could possibly. So maybe it's a couple things going on there.
Yeah, and I know that snowfall is always something that is – I hear a lot about when there's been, boy, I hope there's not winter kill.
Right.
And we'll find out. I mean, we don't even know yet on some lakes whether it has happened or not this early in the season.
Yeah, so all those lakes that are marginal, right on the cusp of doing it or not, there are probably a lot of years where they make it through and you can have a really good fish population developing, and then you get that big snowfall, 3 feet of snow, shuts the lights off, and then that lake goes. Right. So
I know that there are some lake associations in lakes that have that danger that have they've got together and they've bought equipment that can help with that.
Sure. Aerators.
Right.
Right. Those are they add oxygen to the water and provide those safe havens, right?
Okay.
There's some trade-offs, I mean, some risks. Then you have thin ice and things like that, and you really need to be careful with those as well. And to do it on a large scale, I mean, let's just say Lake Bemidji or Red Lake was a winter kill lake. Imagine how many aerators you would need, right? So there's some logistical constraints as well.
Right.
Now, the other part of your question related to this topic was what could the public do? One of the largest things that drives this is production, right? Production, nutrients into a system drive up production. So you could, we could possibly turn a lake that is not susceptible to winter kill into one that is by adding excess phosphorus into those systems. Drive up the production. You're ultimately driving up the decomposition that happens during the winter when the lights are out, right?
And what is putting phosphorus? What would be something that adds phosphorus into a system?
Fertilizers on lawns.
Okay.
That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Runoff from agriculture that's not properly managed with buffer strips or riparian zones around the rivers. Not having waterways in agriculture fields grassed, right, or vegetated. Loss of wetlands. All of those things that are sinks to our phosphorus inputs, if we eliminate those are bad situations. And then inappropriately adding excess fertilizer that's not being used or at the wrong times. If you add your lawn fertilizer right before a rainstorm and it doesn't have time to soak in and all runs into the lake, and enough people do that, we could shift the productivity of that lake ecosystem to one where it's susceptible to a winter kill.
Okay. I know that the DNR has been pushing hard, you know, to maintain an area in front of the water that's natural habitat. Does that help buffer the phosphorus as well, even if you are doing?
Yep, the riparian zones are around lakes and rivers are some of the most valuable habitats and ecosystems that there are because of those buffering capacities and because of the habitat complexity that they add to our ecosystems. Imagine those trees that then grow up large and then fall into the lake. That's essential fish habitat. But buffering and removing toxins and the overland runoff, that's a big, big factor.
All right. Talking winter kill with Dr. Andrew Haves to kick off Fish and Fall Bunyan Country because we're about to find out, I suppose, in the next several weeks. So a lot of those questions on what happened will be answered.
Right. It was quite a winter, wasn't it?
It certainly was. Hey, Andy, thanks for your time today. We always appreciate it.
Thank you.
Fish and Fall Bunyan Country! Country!
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save